Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasz Ziolkowski.
Today is Monday, July 10th. It's time for storytelling. We're a community-based internet radio station broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. And our theme today is reunions, part two, because we had so much to talk about related to reunions that we couldn't stop with one show. So I'm going to just say briefly that Stories in the Round meets on October 24th.
Fourth.
This
excuse me.
At the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 324. I'm not going to say the address because it just flew out of my head, but it's in Hagerstown, Maryland,
on Searfoss Pike.
Searfoss Pike, also known as Route 58 and Salem Avenue Extended, west of Hagerstown. Jane Dorfman is our teller this month, and she's going to be presenting her portrayal of Calamity Jane in Calamity's elder years, when she returns to Deadwood to speak before the ladies of Deadwood. And it's quite an amusing and enlightening experience. Wow. So if you're interested in coming, give me a call. Fanny Crawford at 301-730-1638, or you can reach me via email at fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com.
And you know we'll be there.
Yes, I know you
will. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that because Terry and I, on one of our vacations, actually spent some time in Deadwood.
All right.
You know, it was great.
Does Jay know that?
I don't think so.
Oh, she will be excited to hear that.
But I'll tell her, you know. We went and had a great time there. It was interesting. We visited the graveyard and all that stuff, you know. See the grave of the famous guy, gunfighter.
Wyatt Earp.
Card player. And also there were quite a few motorcyclists around
Tell us about what's coming up at Speak, because I know it's a big deal.
Speak story series. We even got new brochures.
All
with
right.
A new logo.
And
actually it's the same logo, but it's a new version, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And what's coming up is Adam Booth in a really super special presentation. Nice article in the paper in Shepherdstown about this. And Adam is doing an original show that he's been working on for a long time. And it's called The Heron's Journey. And he has worked with a paper artist, the Japanese folding
origami.
Origami. This is a different thing. He actually has a beautiful heron that was made for him by a professional craftsman, and he has worked with a choreographer for this show because he's going to be moving with the birds that he's talking about. And besides using his voice, he'll be using his body. So we're very excited about it. And that's going to be tomorrow and Wednesday, July 11th and 12th at 7:30 at the Frank Center on the campus of Shepherdstown. And the Frank Center is right next to the Wellness Center. So it's easy to find on the campus. And it's also going to be Zoomed on Tuesday. And we are promising there will not be Zoom problems this time. We've worked out a lot of the problems that we were having because of the facility. And now there won't be there. So we're excited about that. I'm excited about it because one of the things Adam has talked about in the direction of Speak is to bring more great storytelling. He's already done that for, this is his 11th year, but to bring even more, even better storytelling and story artists, people who are using storytelling in different ways. And this is an example of one of the ways that he's doing storytelling. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah.
And we, the Speak group walked in the parade last week, 4th of July parade. And I walked in the parade. The entire block, two blocks. Actually, it turns out to be about five blocks because you have to walk about two blocks to get to the parade start. And then, you know, then you have to walk to get your car and all that stuff. But it was fun. It was for me, it was a lot of fun and was a good experience because I wasn't on a cane.
Congratulations.
And I'm still moving without my cane, which is good. I still have the rest. You know, at the farm market yesterday, I sat down a lot, but where we passed out things about Speak. But I sat down for quite a while because standing still bothers my legs, not with pain, just with tiredness.
Sitting is good. We're both sitting right now.
You bet. Okay. Just as long as we don't sit on our laurels.
There you go. Well, on that theme.
Are you going to start?
I can.
All right, that would be good.
Okay. Well, our theme today is reunions, and I am looking forward to a reunion on Friday, this coming Friday. I will be driving with some other storytellers from Hagerstown to Kempton, Maryland, which is in between Oakland in Garrett County, Maryland, and Thomas, West Virginia. It's almost exactly on the state line. It's a place, a retreat, where there the Black Appalachian Storytelling Fellowship fellows will be meeting for one of their gatherings. And I'm really looking forward to having a reunion with Eileen Evans, who's one of my longtime story mentors, and she's part of the committee that put together this fellowship and oversaw the awards to these people. And I did meet most of these awardees at the National Association of Black Storytellers National Conference in Baltimore in November. So it is a sort of reunion with them too. Not that they will know me, but I know them because I heard them tell their stories, and it's quite amazing. So to open, to start to commemorate my excitement to honor this event, I'm going to read an article that Eileen Evans wrote for a newspaper called the West by God, West Virginian newspaper, which is edited by one of the awardees, one of the Black Appalachian Storyteller Fellows. So this article was written in March of 2023 and appeared in the culture section of West by God, Virginian, the West Virginian newspaper. The title is the 2022 Black Appalachian Storytelling Fellowship Awardees. The National Association of Black Storytellers celebrates the importance of stories and storytelling. Storytelling, says Eileen Evans, is at the heart of Black Appalachian culture. It is history, identity, and life preserver in a hostile world. Who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much? You may have asked any or all of these questions today. We make sense of our world as we tell the story of our experiences. We are storytellers in our bones, or as some scholars call humans, homo narrans, the storytellers. I witness these homo narrans, we as homo narrans, every day, Eileen says, living in the Potomac Highlands of West Virginia. We may start to tell a friend about our long journey. They may ask questions to find out more details. How did we get there? Who came with us? What happened? How it all turned out? It's still going on. All the questions are lead-ins to a great story in our own voice. That we explain ourselves through story may seem like common sense, but it's much deeper than that. Stories act as a lifeline through hard times. Stories teach us who we are and why we matter. Stories are the bread of life. From our first breath, our story begins, and our living story weaves into the larger account of our family, our community, our nation, and the world. Where do we fit in the big picture? It's all part of our story. Mama Linda Goss, internationally renowned storyteller, started a storytelling workshop with the question, what is the shortest and the longest story you know? A puzzled class offered many answers to that riddle. Life, a meal, God. They were all right in their own way, but after making us work our brains for a while, Mama Linda answered, your name. Your name includes past, present, and future carried forward in oral history. We can call oral history orature. Orature is the narrative of our life and times, folklore and tales, which are passed down by word of mouth from generation to generation. We are experts of orature here in Appalachia. Our Black communities are also an oral history. We're forgotten when our story is not told. At the National Association of Black Storytellers, we are celebrating the importance of Black Appalachian stories and storytelling, our story and our voice in the national narrative. Our story as a people in and among the mountains has been overshadowed by this broadly held idea that only people of Scotch-Irish descent live here. But that's far from the truth. We must tell our story if we want people to know. 6 Afro-Latchan storytellers were given a fellowship and award by the National Association of Black Storytellers, November 2022, at the annual festival and conference held in Baltimore. This inaugural fellowship was an adjudicated award. The awardees were recognized for artistic excellence in representing their cultural heritage, contribution to folk arts, history, culture, and community. They were chosen out of 28 applicants, all of whom displayed the diversity and artistic skill voiced by their range of media and disciplines. They ranged from traditional tellers like Ray Christensen to museum curators like David Butcher. There was Ruby's special way of teaching through story with her granny's pharmacopoeia to the historical storytellers like Alastair Turley and West Virginia's own newspaper journalist and publisher, the editor of this publication, Black by God, West Virginian. Crystal Good is her name. The range did not leave out the balladeers and folklorists like Sparky Rucker from Tennessee and his long career of research in song and story. National Association of Black Storytellers Fellowship was made possible through partnerships and funding in part by Mid-Atlantic Central Appalachia Living Traditions Program and South Arts as part of the In These Mountains Central Appalachian Folk Arts and Culture. This collaboration maintains and supports the art forms of Black storytelling in Appalachia. Each of the artistic projects reflect many different approaches to how culture is preserved, maintained, and passed on through storytelling. The recipients receive a cash award of $4,000 to support their practice as Black Appalachian storyteller and culture bearer, with opportunities to examine, to research, develop, and perform, and or document the Black Appalachian storytelling tradition. The fellows also receive $1,000 for travel to the 40th annual National In the Tradition Black Storytelling Festival and Conference in Baltimore back in November 2022, and a one-year membership to NAACS, to the National Association of Black Storytellers. The fellows presented the plans for their projects at the festival, and they will be developing and presenting a program in their home communities. That's all I'm going to read of that article, but if we have time later on, I will give you a short summary of each of the six awardees, their projects, and why you will want to stay tuned to them, because there are some amazing artists here, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them again. Of course, my reunion is, in my mind, is mostly with Eileen, because I don't get to see Eileen Evans very often. We live about 3 hours apart. I do see her at places like the NAACS conference, but it's not that often that she stops in Hagerstown or that I get out to Kempton, Maryland, where she lives. But I'm really excited about seeing the storytelling fellows again and spending the evening and dinner with them. So that
sounds exciting.
Basic reunion story.
Right. I wonder if Lynn Ford will be a part of that.
Yes, she's part of the committee. She's part of the Black Appalachian Storytellers Committee. And I guess I should mention all of them. The others are Mama Linda Goss. I wrote them down carefully, so I would be able to tell you that. But I will find that and go ahead, Stosh.
Okay, well, that took about 9.5 minutes, maybe 10. Mm-hmm. I just let you know. Okay. So on reflecting about reunions, I talked last week when we did reunions, I talked about my wife's family reunion without names and everything, so that I didn't say anything that might be misconstrued or cause a problem. And it was a wonderful reunion and a picnic and seeing people. Always makes me feel good because her family accepts me as one of them and treats me very well. And so in thinking about what we're doing today for reunions, I thought that, you know, reunions are held for all kind of reasons, you know, and you can call a group, a meeting sort of people, a reunion. And it doesn't have to be, you know, an official thing, because there are reunions for all kind of reasons. When I was young, I was fascinated to see a picture which shows up on the internet frequently. I notice it now frequently, but when I was young, of course, there was no internet. But I remember seeing this in a book about the Civil War, and it was a black and white picture, and it showed there was a wall, and on one side there were older men. And this, I'm not being a sexist in this, but there were no women in this picture. That doesn't mean there were no women involved in the Civil War. There were some, but this picture shows a group of men from the Confederate Army, men who had fought in the Civil War. They were all dressed. It's interesting. They were all dressed very nicely, either in dress attire or else their old uniforms. And on the other side of the wall, there were veterans from the North Army. Army of the Northern States. And it was a great picture, and there was an article with it. And each time I've seen that picture, there's an article that shows these men shaking hands, swapping stories, and being friends. And this picture was taken 50 years after the Civil War was ended. And I think it's one of the nice pictures that show people who have fought against each other, but who have reconciled and who have learned to be good citizens and to be proud of their country and their background without being angry and without, you know, wanting to destroy the others. Of course, that would be a good lesson for lots of engagements and military engagements. And so doing a little bit of research, and there's been a group meeting from World War I for many years. Very few, if any of them, will be left this year. But because there were great many casualties in World War I, but there is a group that meets every year to celebrate the fact that their war is done and they're not out to kill each other. It's interesting to read about those reunions of military people who have been World War II veterans. Many of them go to the beaches in Normandy and there's a yearly reunion, and I've read some great articles written by people who went there who were so touched being there for the first time after years and years and years after they served in the military there. And the remembrances that they share of people who were lost or people who survived that, and how difficult it was because there were lots of casualties, and the people who do attend those get to renew some friendships and also get to spend time remembering their comrades in arms. And it is not one-sided. There are some veterans who go there who were on the wrong side of, in someone's mind, of the war, but who fought for what they believed in and survived. And they go to remember the good things about what has happened since then. Not enough good things have happened since then, but they still meet. So the military is one place where there are lots of reunions. There are also reunions for I was in the military. I was never involved in a military reunion as such, but I have seen articles about soldiers getting together who met as teenagers in basic training and then spent a career in the military.
I'm going to Spring Valley.
Either be safe. Either in the military or other careers, but have gotten together at someone's initiative and were able to spend a nice weekend or sometimes just a long day with guys that they would not recognize because it was so long ago that they were teenagers in basic training and then went on into the military. But they still get the chance to share stuff, share information about families and reminisce. There's always lots of laughter, some tears, because there are people who are missing who they got to know. But also some great stories about successes, either in the military or in a career that was kind of started because they were in the military. Some of them 20 years in the military and then retiring, and others just a few years in the military, but who took some of the skills that they learned into their life. And you hear lots of stories. I would tell my story. Going into the Army at the age of 17 was one of the best decisions I ever made. It was a little bit scary, but it was also 3 years of excellent learning. I was taught many things that helped me in my when I went to college immediately after the Army, and then when I became a teacher, and I had a career of 40 years, and often I can't think of probably any semester that I didn't talk about the military being such a good thing for me, helped me to really grow up and taught me that I could do things. And one of the things that the military taught me was, if it's physically possible and you're willing to spend the time and the effort, then you should do it. If it's a good thing, that's all you have to do is have the time and make the effort. And if you're able to do that, you should. So I'm all for non-combat military people to get together. I would like all non-combat to go on from now on. However, as we know, that's not very practical in a sense, because we are human beings and human beings tend to want to fight with each other over all kind of crazy things. So that's my first reunion thing.
That was delightful. Thank you, Stosh.
Good.
I have heard stories from you about most of your military stories are about your own experiences in the military, but I've also heard a lot of stories about the people that you met there and their impact on you and what you learned being overseas for that time and the interesting people, the memories that you brought home.
Oh, absolutely.
Good stories. I want to say that our listeners speak to our listeners and say you are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stosh Ziolkowski.
And our theme today is reunions.
And have we thanked Andy?
No, we have not.
Okay. Well, we should thank Andy Offutt Irwin for his wonderful song, Tarry Here, and his performance of the song, which opens our show every week and is on our podcast for lots and lots and lots of our shows. A wonderful composition, and Andy very generously and kindly allows us to use that as our theme song. And it's a wonderful song, and I hope everyone gets to listen to the words and understand. They're really so well written and sung. So thank you, Andy.
And I want to thank Andy for coming to Stories in the Round last month. I'm still getting kudos and excited congratulations on a great show. People are contacting him directly to tell him how much they enjoyed his hour at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown on the 26th. I did prepare a poem that I think people might find interesting. The poet John Donne is famous for his love poems. Of course, he's from a long time ago. He lived from 1572 to 1631. And a lot of his poems are about the intense relationship between friends and lovers and parting and the end of those relationships, or ways to keep those memories alive, ways to keep friendships and relationships alive. And I found two poems on the theme of reunion by John Donne. I'll do the longer one, and then if we have time, because I also want to talk about the individuals who are part of the Black Storytelling Fellowship, the Black Appalachian Fellowship. But this is called Forbidding Mourning by John Donne. As virtuous men pass mildly away and whisper to their souls to go, whilst some of their sad friends do say, the breath goes now, and some say, no. So let us melt and make no noise, no tear floods nor sigh tempests move. 'Twere profanation of our joys to tell the laity our love. Moving of the earth brings harms and fears. Men reckon what it did and meant. But trepidation of the spheres, though greater far, is innocent. Dull sublunary lover's love, whose soul is sense, cannot admit absence, because it doth remove those things which elemented it. But we, by a love so much refined that ourselves know not what it is, interassured of the mind, care less, eyes, lips, and hands to miss. Our two souls, therefore, which are one, though I must go, endure not yet a breach, but an expansion, like gold to airy thinness beat. If they be two, they are two, so as stiff twin compasses are two. Thy soul, the fixed foot, makes no show to move, but doth if the other do. And though it in the center sit, yet when the other far doth roam, it leans and hearkens after it and grows erect as that comes home. Such wilt thou be to me, who must, like the other foot, obliquely run. Thy firmness makes my circle just and makes me end where I begun. What a sense of humor that guy had. You're muted, Stosh. I can
tell you. I'm sorry. I try to mute myself when you're talking. Mm-hmm. So I don't, inadvertently do something.
And then we forget to turn ourselves back on.
Yeah, you know. my remark was, that poem would be a good thing to introduce a math class. I always like to find a way that I could use it in teaching, you know.
Yeah.
Really.
So how would you use that one in a math class, Mr. Z?
Well, to show the completion of the circle. The circle was very important in math, and it's really sometimes, you know, sometimes children just take it for granted because it's everywhere. Smiley faces, wheels, you know, tires on bikes, everything, you know, everybody uses circles for to focus attention and things. And sometimes kids get scared of things like geometry, you know, especially if they're, you know, they're, especially when, in my experiences teaching, when they were told, female students, that girls don't do math, and girls don't like math, and girls aren't good at math and all that stuff, which is a lot of really crazy stuff. That's the only crazy things I can blame parents for. Any parent who tells a child that they're not good at something is being a mean parent. They should be locked up or something. Okay. I'm a little extreme in my opinions, but that's true, you know? And so something like the circle is a nice thing to talk about lots of different parts of, mm-hmm. of math, but also it adds all kind of possibilities for lessons of learning, completing the circle, completing a task, you know, going back to the beginning to make sure that you've covered all your bases and everything.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to complete the circle of talking about the Black Appalachian storytellers, because I wanted just to put their names out there.
Okay, so
if anybody's interested in what each of these people are really, really good at.
Good. And I have
Five different states. Alistine Turley is from Kentucky. She's an author, a professor, an advocate, and a mentor, supporting many other storytellers and artists. Kentucky. She has a book called The Gospel of Freedom, Black Evangelicals and the Underground Railroad, that was released in 2022 by the University Press of Kentucky, and was winner of the Thomas D. Clark Foundation Medallion Book Award. She has another book that's scheduled for release in 2024 called Freedom Stories. And I'm really looking forward to hearing, to seeing her stories, because I did hear her tell at the NABS conference. She's also part of a project called the Harvard Intercultural Inventory, and she's a licensed practitioner. So I'm going to look that up and find more about the Harvard Intercultural Inventory. Raymond Christensen is a teller and performer from North Carolina. He's a podcast producer, a teaching artist, and a mentor. He's a Fulbright specialist. He has a PhD in education and storytelling narrative, and taught African American history and storytelling at Appalachian State University. And I know some retired professors from Appalachian State, so I'm eager to ask Ray if he knows any of those people. He's living in the mountains of Watauga County, North Carolina. I did not even know there was a Watauga County in North Carolina, so it's very remote. And he produces the podcast, What's Ray Saying?, using history and storytelling to explore the Black American experience. David Butcher from Ohio is a historian, genealogist, curator, and a museum founder of the Tablertown People of Color Museum in Stuart, Ohio. He's an active community organizer, currently on the boards of the Southeast Ohio History Center, Rural Action and Central Region Humanity Center. And he has exhibits at the Kennedy Art Museum at Ohio University as well. I know that you've heard Stash, Sparky Rucker from Tennessee. Okay. Sparky and his wife Rhonda are performers and recording artists, teaching artists, active in the civil rights movement as well. Sparky's been singing songs and telling stories from the American tradition for half a century. He performs with Rhonda Rucker. They do vocals, guitar, banjo, and spoons. And Sparky has released 15 albums, including Treasures and Tears, which was nominated for the W.C. Handy Award for traditional recording back in the 90s. The fifth teller is from West Virginia, Crystal Good. And she is the editor, the founder and publisher of That Black by God, the West Virginian, that I mentioned earlier in the show today. It's a news and storytelling organization focusing on Black voices in and from West Virginia. She's the author of two poetry collections, Valley Girl and Marking My Territory, and she's a three-time TEDx talker and a feature consulting producer on Black Appalachia. That was a documentary on CNN. And Crystal is working on a biography of a woman named Bricktop, who was famous African-American woman, famous at the turn of the 19th century in West Virginia and surroundings for her salons and cultural events, where she would invite movers and shakers from all over the region to present to the community. And Ruby Daniels is the fourth, also the sixth, also from West Virginia. She's a therapeutic herbalist and a workshop presenter, and owns Creasy Janes, which is a group formed to provide education, products, and fresh produce to her local community. She learned her skills, her trade, from her elders in West Virginia. She has a master's in therapeutic herbalism and is focusing her studies on Appalachian foods and herbs, field botany, and phytochemistry. She focuses on African-American relationships to the plants and forests of Appalachia and teaches through storytelling. I just love these guys, these quirky, eccentric individuals who are experts and teachers in their own way, artists and teachers in their own way.
Wow, wonderful. Well,
do you have a short piece you want to do in what's left of our time?
Yeah, we've been on for 42 minutes. I started it exactly on the one when you said 3, 2, 1. So
very good.
So we have time.
Okay.
So what I wanted to do was mention the other groups that have reunions. That, you know, I think when you say reunion, people automatically think of family reunions. But then if you just look around, there are school reunions, class reunions, team reunions, of course, family reunions, event reunions, people who were there that day. One of the things that I've always liked is that on my birthday in 1963, I think, Martin Luther King gave a great speech in front of the Washington Monument in D.C. In front of one of the monuments. And it was the I Have a Dream speech. And it was given on August 28th, 1963. And I feel good about that every year because it's on my birthday. It had nothing to do with me, but it was on my birthday. And that's how I can remember that event. You know, another kind of reunions that are really popular are neighborhood reunions. There are people who have moved away from where they raised their children. A lot of times this happens with older folks. They raised their children in a certain community and their kids played with the neighbor's kids. People had a nice, you know, area where they did things together, all this stuff. And then as they get older and older, someone will get the idea that we should have a reunion from, you know, I had one, in fact, I've had two, one in 2009 and one in 2013, I believe, of guys from the old neighborhood, the Dorham Street Gang. A little Dorham Street was an alley between the two major streets in Baltimore, Ann Street and Wolf Street. And there were, in that one square block, that city block, there were 40 kids under the age of 21. Only four girls, maybe five, because I think there was a baby girl that was born while I was a teenager, who never really got into the gang, but who lived in that block. And when I had that reunion in 2009, we had 11 guys from the old neighborhood showed up, and you know, some of us hadn't seen each other in 40 some years, and we had a great time there. And did it in Baltimore. And then a few years after that, had another reunion in Baltimore, at a pizza parlor that we used to go to as kids, across the street from a movie house that we used to go to, in a park where we used to play a lot of ball. And it was interesting because there were six of us, and we got to swap even more stories that day. Of course, there are reunions of unions. I've heard John talk about going to, you know, events that I would call a reunion of people involved in different kind of union activities and stuff. And also, I think one of the best things, if you were involved as a performer, is the Comic-Con and other performer kind of reunions. You know, I would think, and this might be a stretch, but you know, the people who go to the Oscars, physically go to the Oscars event and sit and gather, that's a sort of reunion, because there are a lot of movie stars who go to that who don't see the other movie stars all year long, unless they happen to be, you know, in the same movie, stuff like that. But there are a lot of performers. I read an interesting thing about not just Comic-Con, but about the performers who go have reunions. Somebody schedules a reunion for instance, Star Trek. And there was an interesting article by someone who was a very small part player in some of the early Star Treks. However, once they started having these reunions, and people would dress up and you know, this guy went and had a copy of his costume made and started attending the reunions. And each year he got to be more and more popular because he was very willing to talk about his time and the number. He did like 12 different shows on Star Trek, 12 different times he was in Star Trek. And almost none of them did he get to really, you know, be in front, you know, with Captain Kirk or with the next guy.
Patrick Stewart,
you know, Picard, Captain Picard. And even though he had a few times he had a speaking role, not very many words, but people remembered it. You know, people who go to something like that, you know, are Star Trek fans. I know I saw every Star Trek, original Star Trek, you know, for the 3 years it was on, and thought it was terrible when they took it off. I didn't care that it was not done as fancy as they do things nowadays. I thought it was interesting. I have burned in my head is a picture of Captain Kirk fighting the alligator man. And, you know, I'd say if I said that, you, yeah. And if I've said that to anybody over the years who's ever looked at Star Trek, they would remember that because it was a great battle, you know, on this planet. And they were the only two people up in the whole show, I think. And, anyway, this guy that had some small parts has been a regular at Star Trek conventions for many years. Even, you know, there are people who could not have possibly seen him who have you know, gotten his autograph and or get their picture taken with him and everything.
They've seen him in reruns.
Yeah, they've seen him in reruns. And the thing I think that's made him popular, according to his own, you know, writing, is that he was willing to sit and talk to the people. It wasn't just up on stage and answering questions and you know, having fun with it, you know, because sometimes that's what they do. And I read another article where the guy said, I wish they would just not sit up there and because it's looks like they're performing again. I would like to hear real stuff from them. And so this guy gets down with the crowd, walks around, talks to them, hands out his card, which has some information on the different, you know, episodes he was in and everything. And I think that's a great way to, you know, let people, you know, relive some of the good memories about that. Some of the minor characters were very important. You know, Wesley Crusher is one who was just a skinny kid and all that stuff. And you find out all kind of things. He was in one of the best movies, a Stephen King movie. He was in, I think it's called Stand By Me or something like that, about some friends who are going looking to see a dead body that they heard about. And anyways, really good movie. And I liked him more for that movie as a kid than I did for Star Trek. But he also then became famous again for the Big Bang Theory because of Sheldon Cooper, who was, they were like enemies for a long time because of all kind of crazy stuff in those differences of opinion about this Star Trek series. So there you go. And I there have to be other groups that would have besides military, school teams, athletic teams, and other teams, you know, teams that play games, you know, and stuff. Neighborhood kids, neighborhood people, unions, performers, and one you talked about today, storytellers.
Yeah, there's one I go to at Kekapin State Park. That's just a group of women who like to retreat to the woods and hang
women.
Out Ooh, in the middle of the winter.
That sounds very. That sounds very interesting. Do they run through the woods and stuff like that?
There are a couple of us that run. I mostly walk through the woods, and one of us is a botanist and leads us on hikes through the woods that are it's freezing cold usually because it's just before Valentine's Day, but it's really, really wonderful to be out there looking at winter forest.
Yeah.
Well, I have a short little poem.
Okay.
Another one from John Donne. This is called The Expiration. And again, it's about reunions and the lack of them or the hope for them within a relationship. Oh. Mm.
Okay.
So break off this last lamenting kiss, which sucks two souls and vapors both away. Turn, thou ghost, that way, and let me turn this, and let ourselves benight our happiest day. We ask none leave to love, nor will we owe any so cheap a death as saying, go. Go, and if that word have not quite killed thee, ease me with death by bidding me go too. Or if it have, let my word work on me and a just office on a murderer do. Except it be too late to kill me so, being double dead, going and bidding, go.
Oh, nice.
My image of John Donne is sitting at his huge ebony desk or something and writing with this little smile on his face because they're such heavy topics and they're so goofy. Just trying to get to the meat of what he has to say is sometimes a head scratcher for me.
And he lived in the late 1500s, was it?
Yep. Yep, 1572
to 1631. Fletcher, yeah. Wow.
So for the time, he lived a good long life.
Yeah.
I'm seeing in our chat on our Zoom connection here, Stash, a note from our station manager, John, who is referring to your circles conversation, talking about path and circles. He says, on the one hand, on the other hand, a circle or a pancake. No man is an island, or the professional or the professorial ambiguity trap.
Well,
you'll have to ask him what the heck that means.
That's deep.
He also mentions Wild Bill Hickok and Wyatt Earp, because when you were talking about visiting the graveyard in Deadwood. I mentioned Wyatt Earp, and John corrected me, saying Earp is buried in San Diego.
Yeah.
So it must be Wild Bill that I was thinking of. But when Jane Dorfman comes on Monday the 26th to tell 24th to tell at Stories 24th. In the Round, one of the things she may mention that she sometimes mentions in answers to queries from the audience is her understanding from the public the confusion about Wild Bill and Buffalo Bill. And she did know both of them. Calamity Jane knew both Buffalo Bill and Wild Bill Hickok, but it was Wild Bill that was her mentor and who she chased around after for a while.
Oh, wow.
But it drives her crazy that people can't tell them apart.
Well, there's, Wild Bill Hickok, the grave is surrounded by a fence in Deadwood, and there's a nice plaque that says some nice things there about, it's interesting how people will make a special person out of someone from history like that, because who knows whether Wild Bill Hickok was a good man or not a good man.
One of the speculations, Calamity Jane always said that she would be buried next to Wild Bill, and several times she climbed onto the monument to claim him. But I think John wants to say something.
I can clarify a little bit about Wild Bill, because legend passed down through my family says that my great grandfather was part of a committee that was living in Abilene in 1870, and they wanted to hire Wild Bill. He was at the time a marshal in Hayes City, which was a little farther east. And, as the railroad went west and was completed, then of course any place where it had a station and could provide enough water, to keep the steam going, you could now do commerce with Chicago. That was a revolution. And people would actually pay you cash or gold or money or whatever. That means your town had to have a bank pretty soon. Right. So, so they hired Wild Bill, and he was an actual, quick draw. And when he was not drunk, he was, pretty deadly with his, he was deadly both times. Anyway, he only lasted a little while because he tended to, resolve matters by shooting people. And, and at one point he shot one of his own deputies because he was drunk and he didn't recognize him. And so he was relieved of that responsibility and, had... At some point later, headed north to Deadwood. But And then they subsequently adopted the ERP policy of just, you know, banning guns in town.
Oh, what a great idea.
You know, because it just, you know, having shootouts was inevitably, you know, it's going to hit all kinds of people.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that was the, and they did the, and my great-grandfather, who wanted to become involved in politics in Abilene, after he made it some money, I can't remember how he made the first money, but anyway, he was only 21 years old, and so, anyway, so he used to ban the discussion of religion and politics at the dinner table because people came to the dinner table armed half the time. And, you know, you just didn't want to start an argument if people were carrying pistols around. So, but then he got involved in politics, and he said he wanted to get involved. So you had to be able to talk politics at the dinner table. So at that point, he said, well, if you're going to come up to dinner, you got to leave the weapons at the on the hook by the door.
Right.
So, anyway.
That's a good story.
Supposedly, yeah. A story about Wild Bill.
Good one.
Well, I think we've used up the time. We're beyond 60 minutes now.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. The Storytelling Hour invites our listeners to listen and share stories that belong and could be shared with all of us. Stay tuned for
Very smooth jazz today. Just very smooth.
Very smooth, yes, jazz.
Yeah, cool. You can see right through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I wonder if any of the criminals of today, you know, people who killed other people, will be legends in 100 years.